Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Hey. What's your name? Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Ian Mackey is here. David Barklage is on his way. Ian is kind of slow out there. Is that right?
It is quite slow out there. I heard the traffic report on the way in, but it's getting slower and slower and slower for sure.
Yeah. So I found a fellow summer hater.
Yeah, you did. The only reason I look tan is the bottle I buy from Target. I don't spend a whole lot of time outside. Play a little tennis here and there. That's about the only time I like going outside. But otherwise,
that's Rachel's new sport.
Is it?
Yeah. I try to play every day, actually.
I try as many. I'm hoping that the courts are dry enough in Clayton by 5:30 we can get a game in. But
nice.
Let me know anytime. That's the only thing I'm interested in doing outside in the summer.
No, seriously, I would love to hit sometime. It'd
that's
be fun.
Great. Perfect. Yeah. Yep. But otherwise, yeah, give me the winter time. Let's have some snow.
Me too. Me too. And I'd like, they get so tired of it. Hey, Dave, the listeners get so tired of hearing me bitch about it, but my HVAC system's really old. And, and it's the last 3 years, Mike, this is it. And so far, it just keeps on chugging.
You got to have a bedroom window unit backup. I don't care what quality central air you got. You got to have that backup in the bedroom for sure.
Yeah.
Set as far as low as it'll go.
Yes. Right in your face.
Yes, exactly. Yes. All night.
Dave, good to see you. How are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
Good, man. Are you a summer lover or a summer hater? We're haters.
Summer lover.
Yeah.
Look, I would get rid of spring. I would keep summer. I'd shorten it. You know, a few weeks, I would make the fall twice as long.
There you go.
And winter, like 2 months. Like December and January, February is no good to me. March, April, and May, I'd get rid of.
I'll sign that bill.
All right. Yeah. That's a good compromise.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Let's end this. Let's end this show. Let's just go home. This is great. So congratulations, Ian. You had something signed into law.
Yeah, I did. An issue I've worked on for a few years, got a lot of bipartisan support this session and was signed into law last week to prevent schools from using zero tolerance discipline policies when they discipline and usually end up suspending children who usually are engaged in some sort of physical altercation. And there's a zero tolerance policy for bullying or for violence or sometimes for certain language that's used. And oftentimes kids are caught in a trap of defending themselves and reacting to a situation or even intervening in a situation and end up getting disciplined under, you know, a so-called zero tolerance. So this says, look, you know, discipline appropriately, do what you need to do. But when a parent says, hey, why was my kid, you know, sent to detention or suspended or whatever the case may be, the answer can't be zero tolerance. You've got to explain the facts as the administrator. You've got to say what happened and why you think that punishment's fair.
Now, I want to equivocate on two things here. One, I want to say I wish that would have been passed when I was in grade school because, one, my parents always believed whatever they said.
Yeah.
And, in fact, they were probably correct in believing that. And I got disciplined so many times and paddled so many times. I would have liked to have had some kind of backup under the law. But I'm not quite sure it would be justice. It would just be giving me one more way to get out of things.
One less way. Well, it's interesting you say that it was bipartisan because had I never heard of the issue before, that sounds more like a conservative issue.
It became that very quickly. I mean, it was a couple of parents had brought it to my attention. One parent in particular whose son, just should not have been suspended. Her kid had autism, severe autism, was, being bullied and trying to respond and ended up getting suspended for several days just by, trying to respond in with inhibited cognitive function, trying to respond to what was, he was being bullied. And then, telling those stories, so many more stories came out. And then other, representatives from the other party started hearing from people in their district. We've, got superintendents and principals and teachers, that I serve with that are in the majority party. And, we sat down
and pushed back and say he is no conservative. He's just not partisan.
That's right. Yeah.
Super partisan, hyper partisan. Yeah, I need to defend him. Otherwise, you're going to get him unelected.
Yeah, he's going to get in trouble.
That's right.
Yeah, someone's going to primary him.
Yes. Yeah, well, no, they can't. I'm not out on the ballot anymore. I'm done. I turn him out.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, I could say whatever I want.
See, this is a little weird. I'm sitting to the left today.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out my voice here, which side I should be on. But go ahead.
Yeah, just be yourself. Yeah. So Ian and I were talking before you got here, Dave, that nationally, I know there are a lot of things going on, a lot of important things, but the news cycle is obsessed with Epstein and the effect that it's having on MAGA. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, look, I don't know what to think. There is, I think, legitimate discussion about what was his role. You look at the people that he was catering to. You look at the activities that occurred, and it is somewhat nefarious. You almost wonder, was it organized? And to that, I think it's reasonable debate. And I think his death was mysterious, even if it is explainable. I think that there has been mixed signals from law enforcement under Democrat and Republican administrations. And so if there were anything that were called, let's call it the fertilizer of a conspiracy, this has all the elements to do that in a bipartisan way. And so it has now come to fruition or bloomed in the middle of Donald Trump, who was trying to uncover it. But because whatever was expected didn't come out, it then brings him into the conspiracy, making it even bigger. So, I think it is the nature of the world we have created. I think it is a great representation. Maybe it will be a case study. Maybe it will be a book someday of how the Epstein movement and issue sort of just brought together all these kinds of threads that have been percolating. Maybe it is the end of this stuff, or maybe it is the beginning of sort of the mega conspiracies. But I think this is indicative or reflective of where society is, and it has all the hallmarks that have come together, and it should be an intellectual as well as a political discussion because of the way this is structured.
Do you think it's a real danger to Trump?
No, I think that I think it is whenever you ride like the progressives have or an AOC or a Trump, you ride a group of people that are somewhat that part of your coalition is very excitable, very not partisan, but sort of has a certain view of government. I think there's the risk of them turning on you. And so I think that is the other thematic we are seeing, that the far left and far right basically end up consuming their leadership. And it's just a matter of when it happens. And this may be the time that Trump starts to lose those. Because look, those people that supported Trump, in my opinion, I'd love to hear your view on that, supported Trump because he was saying things that had never been said by a presidential candidate. And they liked the Trump that talks. Our polling shows that not so many people like what Trump says, but a lot of people like what he's doing. These people only liked what he was saying. They really weren't about constructive government, about building roads or coming together or bipartisan. They just want to blow things up. And there are sort of equal number, I think, today of anarchists at the bottom of both parties that are almost, you know, they're almost together, even though they're completely separate. And to that regard, they cannibalize. And I think this is his moment that they are cannibalizing on this issue.
Ian, that's a really interesting thought that the anarchists out there are probably in the same basement together, left and right.
Well, yeah, I think that's true. And I get certainly the point about, you know, eating your own. I hate to say it's Trump's moment because I've been saying that since he, you know, mocked John McCain for being a war hero. That wasn't his moment. And there hasn't been ever his moment. So I don't know. I hope it is. But I think really what's happening is, yeah, I mean, you see the groundswell from, you know, maybe activists or the far right, you know, voters themselves. But I think really what it is it's driven by the media ecosystem there, because this is what gets them clicks. This is what's making them money. I mean, Charlie Kirk has wanted to back off of it, said he was backing off of it, then didn't. Laura Ingraham going out there. I mean, I don't think she necessarily benefits or wants to make Donald Trump a punching bag and get into a fight with him, but she wants to make money and she wants to get clicks. And this is what that media ecosystem is asking for. And so they're saying, they're weighing basically, do I keep my consumers happy or do I keep Trump happy? And they're choosing, I'm going to keep my consumers happy. And so that's just keeping the story going. And there's so many things that the administration could do to drip, 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 or to just dump something, anything, a blank piece of paper. And I know they tried, I guess, a little, they could try a little harder to just dump some, or start a commission that never comes to a conclusion. That would work too. But to do something to end the, because this is going on for days.
So one, I want to tell you just like all of us were wrong on Trump, because we were all applying the rules of what we knew politics to be, and we're in that change. And so I don't think anybody rightly predicted the Trump phenomenon. One, two, that again, it is when you're leading a riot or leading, you know, protesters. The problem is, as long as you're hyping them up, as long as you're, you know, bringing them to a crescendo, it's good. But the second you try to bring them down, it's not good. And I think that is the problem in modern politics. We are getting people that don't have the job, that don't have the chair, that are bringing these people up. And when they get the chair, all of a sudden they realize, holy cow, I can't do what they want, because what they wanted me to tear the place down, and now I'm responsible for keeping it together. And it's sort of, you know, a cycle again and again, that when extremist politics come, they keep cannibalizing themselves. It's not a good ending.
That's so smart.
I mean, yeah, I think that's true. I don't know. I don't know to what extent he'll be able to. I mean, he's also, one thing we know about him after all these years is he is a master of diversion and redirection. I mean, this is about the longest news cycle I can think of in a long time that he's not been in control of. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he had just waited to bomb Iran 2 more weeks, you know, maybe this would all look different, right? And we'd forget about this. I mean, he will find something to cannibalize the media system, so, and the news cycle before I think it gets
him. I
want
to give advice to a Democrat, and that is this, and it's friendly advice, is that I think that's a mischaracterization about the redirection and everything else. I think you need to think as Trump as the reaction. And you might call him an overreaction, but the point is, I think he's the reaction to the previous administration. Open borders, a lot of people would say no sovereign nation could really have open borders, and I don't want to debate immigration. But my point is, I think a lot of what he's doing is bringing back this sort of extremism from the left that took a hold. Because, you know, even a lot of the mainstream, Schumer and others, were not for open borders, and then it just sort of happened. And again, I think the grassroots sort of pushing people that way. I think the extremism of, you know, all these labels and what is right and what is not, and everybody's like saying, well, I'm not trying to be a racist. Well, if you don't say what I think or you don't know what I think, you are. And my point is, I actually think it's fair to his place in history is the reaction to what occurred. And we saw that with Nixon after Kennedy and Johnson. And this is a cycle that has been throughout American history. But I think Donald Trump actually is the reaction to what has happened. And reactions are tough. I mean, they're the opposite. They're the mirror. And to that regard, you feel the drama, you feel, you know, that, oh my God, he's just over the top. Well, in many respects, he is, except when compared to what was before him. He is the natural occurrence, I think. And so I think understanding that in politics is more helpful to maybe figuring out where we go next.
Was Biden the reaction to Trump version one?
No, I think Trump was a exception in the middle of that. I think it was, we saw this conservatism of Reagan moderating into Bush to Clinton to Bush two, and then it started to move to the left with Obama. And I think that there was that Trump was sort of early, and it hadn't taken fully a hold. And then Biden sort of finished the cycle and now it's moving the other direction. I think Trump was sort of an odd exception because of the weakness of the Democrats at that time, just like Watergate sort of interrupted the Republican resurgence, you know, and you had Ford and then you had to Carter because of Watergate. And I think that's natural in history. You have a historical trend, but sometimes they're interrupted by certain circumstances.
So if the Democrats win again, whether it's the whole thing, they run the table or they just get the Oval Office in 28, would you expect it to be an AOC wing, or would you expect it to be a more moderate wing?
Oh, no, I think it would certainly be a more moderate wing for sure. I mean, I just think that's historically been the electorate of our country in a presidential election. I mean, I think I don't know what it would take to bring on such an extreme. I mean, obviously reactionary politics is nothing new. I don't know what it would take to get, you know, something like AOC. I mean, I think that maybe a Great Depression, but I don't think that would bring on AOC, and that's just not where our electorate is.
See, I hope you are right. I suspect, however, that both of our parties are still going to struggle because of the energy that we have given and the attention that the media gives and that the access that they have to social media. I fear that between the media, social media, between the insurgence of interest groups that have become more powerful in the far left and far right and being able to bring money to those people, that it may not be quite as quick, that we are going to have the Republican Party in an all-out war in this next cycle because of, you know, Trump being gone and no apparent leader, and where that sort of group of radicals in our party, go. Is it going to be enough synergy to bring some very right-wing, well, not right-wing, I don't characterize them as conservative or right, I characterize them as more anarchist, but, and the same thing, your party, what I'm seeing is that you're in that same war where some people on the left believe it hadn't gone far enough left and we need to embrace it. And the problem is there's a lot of money and activism there. And I think it's hard to still be a moderate Democrat, even though I think they understand they want to be more centrist.
I don't think it's too hard to be a moderate Democrat. And I mean, we still have the same primary, map playing out. Our most rabid Democratic voters don't live in Iowa and they don't live in New Hampshire. And they, California and New York are not the first states to vote in the Democratic primary. And there's a reason for that. And I think you're going to continue to see, just as you've seen, I mean, look at the people who are leading the pack. I mean, you can look at Gavin Newsom and say, oh my God, he's the governor of California. That must mean he's an insane far left radical. You look at him for 30 seconds, you realize that's not true. Pete Buttigieg, you go on and on.
What about the governor of Kentucky? What do you think his chances are?
Sure.
He's very popular among, I have a Republican family that's lived in Kentucky that think Beshear is really the kind of Democrat they like.
He's the kind of Democrat I like too. And I think a lot of the reason why Republicans say that is because he looks like the kind of Democrat that they would like, and he sounds like it, and he's from a place where they like. He's got a pretty liberal streak to him. I don't want to discredit him. He's got a very liberal streak to him when it comes to abortion, when it comes to transgender rights, when it comes to you name it, some hot button issues. He's a true and tried Democrat, but he knows how to talk to people, and that's what people like. He knows how to communicate effectively without putting people down, without canceling, all that kind of stuff.
Well, actually, I think the most important thing that you said, the differentiation of him is he is liberal in those issues, but I think the priority of those issues to him is down here, that at some point the politicians are going to realize that those kind of issues that are so socially driven, culturally driven, special interest driven, that if we push those to the bottom and start talking about core education, core transportation, core safety, that then all of a sudden Democrats look a lot less liberal, Republicans look like a lot less, whatever term we want to call them, and we start coming together. I think it's a matter of prioritizing downward these cultural issues.
That was great. We only need to do one segment. That was fantastic. That was
okay,
really, really
hey,
good.
We passed. All right, good.
David Barklage and Ian Mackey, thank you, boys. Appreciate it. Quick break right back. DGS.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests. Proven in all 50 states, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I thought that was an especially good think tank.
I like those guys.
Yeah, very intellectual, very reasonable, and some ideas I hadn't really heard before. That was really, really good. Appreciate that. And Ian hates summer.
I mean, you found a kindred spirit, Dave.
I certainly
I'm happy
did
for you.
In so many ways.